Bow for prayer. Lord, you have spoken through your servant Paul that all authority is established by God and that rulers hold no terror for those who do right. Teach us what this means when we are confused and in disagreement about what is right. Amen. First of all, it was really interesting being here participating in the worship. I had so many flashbacks to earlier years. Man, oh man. You know, sitting in church and hearing guitars for the first time, hearing all the frowns out loud behind me, thinking, what has invaded our church? And also thinking as I grew a little older, going to some of these Jesus people churches and seeing people my age so hungry for the Bible, unvarnished, sung in the ways they were familiar with instruments which they had practiced. Coming home and hearing my father saying that people who played those instruments in church had no business being there. Also, thinking back on times when I was a hot-headed youngster with lots more hair than I have now, but marching in streets demonstrating against nuclear arms and other things that seemed so prevalent and so immediate to our attention and our fears at the time. I remember in particular hearing a message from my pastor at one point, who was in disagreement with the new way in which our conference was going, in which there was a new program for television, in which a certain guitar kind of music was being played and was being promoted. And he urged our congregation not to support that, not to listen to it, because it was evil. And I remember going up to him after the service and saying, I didn't care if he didn't like it. That wasn't the point, but he had no business speaking behind the pulpit about something he just didn't like. And I thought of that as I was preparing this sermon, because this is what Jesus is doing to the Pharisees, the leaders of his time, to the scribes, people who somehow had taken it upon themselves to tell everyone else how they should live, what they should do. And it seems, as I listen to the media, politics is the part that takes the most air we breathe these days. Perhaps that's been that way most of the time in history, but it appears to have taken on an extra dimension in the last few years. Moreover, it seems as though the church has become more politicized as well. It's a development that has diminished its authority in society for many, and frequently led to seriously compromised witness to the reconciling or to reconciling people to Christ and also to one another. And so this morning I want to use this text, hopefully in the way that it was meant to be used, but to discern a little better what it is that the role of the people of God have in kind of speaking to issues of the day. How should we proceed? Now our text this morning doesn't give us any answers. It may, however, give us some help in thinking about what are appropriate responses to issues, be they political, religious, or otherwise, that confront us. Now, over the past few chapters, from chapters 21 onward toward the crucifixion, Jesus takes on a whole number of issues. He goes to the temple. He arrives in Jerusalem, first of all. Goes to the temple, attacks the money changers and the merchants in the temple. Carries on a running debate with the Jewish leaders, the Sadducees, Pharisees, scribes, etc. And he comes across a people that is going through a period of intense political ferment. This is linked to issues of faith and religion, to aspects of Torah, God's promises. It's linked to history, to the exile and the return of Judah to their homeland. It's linked to the messianic expectations that were just all around them, to the Hasmonean Empire or dynasty that had just preceded them, and to the Roman conquest that now was dominating and had conquered them. So he's having this debate with these various groups of people about what should happen. I want to just talk briefly about some of these groups that were in this debate. There were the Sadducees. They were the conservatives of their time. You may think that the Pharisees were the conservatives. No, but they were the liberals. The Sadducees were made up of old money, old positions, old prestige. They believed that only the Torah, the first five books, or the books of Moses, as we might call them, were relevant to governing the religious life of the Jewish people. Other writings, like prophetic books or the Psalms, were not authoritative. They also practiced a literalist reading. That is, they practiced the piety in its essential form as it was given in Leviticus. They believed in very rigid temple worship, sacrificing every day. They had no belief in the afterlife because it wasn't really mentioned in the first five books. And they were quite wealthy and established. They maintained a kind of status quo with the temple. They believed in fate, not God's kind of intervention in history, and they believed in the free will of human beings. So here they were, the establishment. They were the people who usually held power, probably those who sat in the chief priest's seat. There were the Pharisees. These were the liberals, the progressives. They believed that God spoke through the Torah, yes, but also through the oral tradition that had succeeded it. They believed that the Torah was equally inspired and authoritative. They believed that it emphasized ethical demands and made kind of projections from what it said to what it might mean in our time. They held to a belief in the existence of human beings, their souls after death, and they numbered up to 6,000 before they were eventually overthrown when Rome conquered Judah for the last time. Then there were the Essenes. These were a very zealous group, much smaller. Communitarian, they set up in communities, and they were very strict in their observance of the law, both in the practice of purity and worship. They had kind of linked themselves with the revolutionary Maccabean uprising people and didn't shrink at participating in armed insurrection. And finally, there were the Zealots. Zealots were these otherwise known people called the Sicarii, or the dagger people. They would be the ones who were trying to foment revolution. They arose during the time of Herod the Great and saw him as a puppet of Rome, and saw him as just now making Israel or Judah to be Roman-like. They said one should only pay their taxes to Yahweh, and only to Yahweh was allegiance owed. And they prophesied a very immediate coming of salvation. Different perspectives, all Jewish, all living within the empire, but all finding authentically faithful living different from each other. They might have well asked, how then shall we live? So here's Jesus. Jesus comes into this crew. There comes into this debate. What will he say? Well, in Matthew's gospel, he carries on an extended conversation with them. And in our text this morning, he says to them, first of all, beware of the ones sitting in places of authority. Beware. He says, when they read the law, obey what they say. When they interpret and act on the law, don't do as they do. Why? Because they are hypocrites. And it isn't just that they are of a particular party or stripe. They are the part that probably disturbs me most. They are the part who use their position to gain standing among those who they think count. They make their listeners carry the heavy burden of obedience. Do as I say, but don't do as I do. But they don't practice what they preach. In other words, they act in order to be seen. And Jesus here talks about the fact that they make these extra large phylacteries, you know, these little prayer boxes that they used to tie in pious ways around their arms and also around their neck to show that they were praying. They were a praying people. So they make extra large ones to give you the sense that they were really praying people. Or they would embroider their clothes with these long prayer tassels to show that they were incredibly devout prayers. They would go and sit in places of honor or importance in the public just so that they could be seen with those who mattered, that they were close to power. They're the ones who loved popularity, and so they would be showing up at every important event and place. They would love to be honored with titles like, oh, Rabbi this and oh, Rabbi that. This is Jesus speaking to his disciples and others gathered around him about the way in which these people, vying for their attention, really had their worst interests at heart. Rather, Jesus says, forget titles like Rabbi. You only have one master. You are all brothers. Then he says to the disciples, forget the word father. Don't call them father. There is only one father you have, and that father is in heaven. Forget the word teacher or rabbi. You only have one teacher, that is the Christ. Don't listen to other people. Then he says two things that are like daggers into my heart. The greatest is the humblest servant. And it is the humble The one who doesn't care about any of that stuff, who will be exalted. As Tom Wright has remarked, generations of preachers have used this passage to criticize church leaders who like dressing up and being seen in public. And these are the ones with clergy robes and vestments sitting in houses of parliament in Britain. That's the ones he's referring to. But now it seems that many of us, perhaps me, see other versions of it. People hanging out with politicians, going around with Bibles, appearing in churches and holding prayer meetings with influential church leaders. Moreover, the church in many of its forms has chosen to define faithfulness in terms of wealth, of power, of health, making grand pronouncements about public values while engaged in shady and manipulative behavior, and using private interests secretly to help determine public policy in their own region or country. Then there is our own history to look at and consider. Attitudes which continue to discriminate against so many people in our place. Aboriginal people, women, people from other cultures or religions, people with different sexual orientation. Matthew 23 is relevant immediately to those who would claim to lead people of faith, especially those who give leadership to followers of Jesus. Jesus says in this chapter, the greatest is the servant, the true servant, and the highest among you will be the lowest in the eyes of most of their compatriots. As Henry Nouwen said it in the title of one of his books, he said, we descend into greatness. Anabaptist Mennonites have only lately come into the position of power and privilege in our community. I'm not sure we as a people have done it all that well. And the dangers will only grow, because with wealth comes power and influence. And the temptation to use power and influence is almost insurmountable, because, as the title of another book by Jamie Smith goes, you are what you love. Matthew 23, 13 to 39, just after the text I had read, enumerates a number of woes that Jesus speaks to the Pharisees and other leaders in the Jewish community. It also scares the daylights out of me. And it scares, and it should scare, every church leader for as long as they are in any way giving leadership to their community of faith. And so the question is, how is the text I just went through with you, how is this an example of Jesus' love in action? I bet you were wondering that a little bit. Because it's a warning. It's a warning for all of us, especially church leaders. Remember who you are and whose you are. Because your life and the lives of many depend on it. Amen.